Hey guys, welcome to the third episode of the Man Makeover, and thank you for tuning in. Today we are going to have a very fun episode. Our guest for today is Vinay Menon, who is a stand-up comedian, a lecturer, and a TEDx speaker. So without much ado, let's get into the episode. Welcome, Vinay. Welcome to the Man Makeover podcast. Thanks a lot for accepting the invite. It's my pleasure having you on this podcast.
Okay. I'm not that famous. You don't have to give me that much hype and all.
No, sir. I'm actually a very big fan of your comic timing and also the TEDx talk that you had given. I actually connected with that.
Right.
You are very famous. Your TEDx talks are already in millions. The views are already in millions.
Yeah, it's the only thing of mine which has like mainstream reach. Everything else is like one corner of the internet.
So that is one of the major platforms which I usually listen to. And after listening to one of your TEDx talk, I actually searched for all your TEDx talks, and all of them were, I actually connected with all the three of them. I think you had done three, or if I missed anything, I'm not sure.
No, it's like the two ones which were like good on a technical level. So it has like you said, a million reach, and that one which has poor sound, poor audio, poor everything, and like hardly everyone knows.
How to spot the fake news. I think it was a very important topic, but I think
it's something which we'll be getting to today. So
sure. So I really want to talk to you about the Indian education system. Sex, right. And also heartaches, and as you are already a lecturer, you would be interacting with a lot of students. I think you can bring in the right content that we are looking for, or the right thing that we really want to listen to on sex and relationships, heartaches, and the education system. Coming right from the lecturer is actually very nice.
Okay.
For listeners, you are a TEDx speaker, you are a lecturer, you are a stand-up comedian. For me, you are the best critic on our education system. That is because I totally agree with your views, and partially because even I hate our education system because I am not good at mathematics. I am not pretty good at mathematics, and because this mathematics is considered as the gold standard of how good a student is. If you take any competitive exams like JEE, CAT exams, anything where aptitude is important, all these exams judge a student based on his mathematics skills. So what is the message that you want to give for all students who are let down by the education systems, who is judging them only by mathematics skills and memorizing skills?
It's like you said, the problem with mathematics is that it's something like, unlike physics or chemistry, we can directly connect it to our real life, right? So if you just go to a store and you pay money, you need to calculate how much change they owe you. So people, like any human being, can connect easily to mathematics, which is why when people say mathematics is important, they're like, yeah, of course, how else are you going to do your taxes? But not what they teach you. Like, just before that one TEDx talk which you saw, and I think I mentioned it even in that, is that while preparing for the TEDx talk, I googled what is the practical application of in calculus or something like that. So by the time I typed in what is the PRAC, the first option which Google gave me was what are the practical implications. So most people don't know what it's for. I mean, obviously, now I know. Like, I asked my colleagues from the maths department. They are like, oh, it's calculus is what is required to basically calculate, something about the surface of a curved area. So, you can use it in, like, aerodynamics, and you need that to send someone to space. Here's the thing. We are not all sending people to space on a day-to-day basis.
Exactly.
So, you don't exactly need that much. That's, like, advanced level mathematics, right? Yeah. On the other hand, you have something like, let's say history, and history, all you cover is that. So if I ask you, like, what do you remember about World War I? You might remember we had to by heart that it was the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand on such and such date. I don't even remember the dates. And that led to World War I. And this is information which you can access on the internet right now. Internet. Like you can, like 10 seconds, that's all you require. So these are two things which kind of like, I mean, India has its own problems, but generally like the education system is kind of like, okay, we'll teach you all these, you by heart, go, enjoy life. Not enjoy life, like do work, whatever. So they don't, they essentially have made you think like, okay, so you need this information, you will be able to process it. So no one in between thought that, hey, we should teach them how to process this information. What to do with this information once you got it. Because right now, you can readily access all this information online without having going to school. But then you don't know what to do with this information. So if you know what is Pythagoras' theorem, you're like, okay, cool. Now I know what the hypotenuse I can calculate. But what do I do with that? No. Why do I need to study that? So, and another problem, which like you said, the word memorizing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure you are familiar with these the techniques. We used to use that a lot, which is that if you want to by heart some points,
mm-hmm.
you would take like the first alphabet of every word and then you just make a story of it on your own. That number. So even like things like that, even periodic table, I remember like someone used to teach us like hydrogen, helium, lithium, beryllium, ha, he, libe, like that. You just do like some nonsensical chant. So the thing is that why we associate to that a lot is that because human beings are like internally, we are like very much oriented around stories and narratives.
Yeah.
So like, and the world has no story or narrative. It's just a meaningless random occurrence. So in this, if you just take a kid and he's like, here's integration. Here is Pythagoras' theorem. Now figure out what you want to do in life. Obviously they wouldn't know. So which is where they're kind of like, you know, they fall to misinformation and stuff like that. So the people who are like poor in mathematics, there's only one person who I logically met who had some idea of how to use mathematics in life, which is like, and me personally, I was not bad in mathematics, but I was not good in maths either. I was like that 70s, maybe lower 80s kind of person. Like max I could get to like an 82, 83.
I was not so good at mathematics, but I used mathematics. I went to IIT. I studied there. I came back, but I wasn't as good as my colleagues, I can say.
Now see, here's the thing, right? What you say as I was not as good is that what were you not as good as? If I just tell you like, okay, so what is 1/3 of 95? You would immediately imagine that in a formula. 1/3 is equal to x divided by 95. So you have a formula in your head. So that's like your basic mathematics, what you need to do on a day-to-day basis. So most of us have that basic component in our mind. But trigonometry is not... Why? Like, that is stuff which you don't really need on a day-to-day basis. And the reason why I said like I'm like good, pretty decent in mathematics because I had this childhood friend who, for the worst reason whatsoever, he was very good in math. He's like 90s kid. Like 93 was like a lower mark for him. So, and of course, if you are a kid, child, and like your best friend is good in mathematics, your parents immediately like something is wrong with this one.
Yeah.
So we should send them to tuition. Tuition will fix him. Like you just throw things at him. It's essentially kind of like how Indian parents dealt with their kids is like how they would, Indians would deal with the remote. Like it's not working, we'll slap it some, maybe now it's working. So in that sense, all of us are pretty decent in mathematics on a day-to-day basis. But if you're really good in mathematics, that means you have to select that sort of a career. So this I had through all my seminars, I met this one dude who's not dude, like a senior person, of course, he's like into career guidance. And that's what he's been doing his entire life. So he's now an expert into how the system works and all that. And he's very, like what do you say, practical about that. He's not like, oh, follow your dreams kind of person. So he said, if you are good in... So I seen him, how he takes a seminar. And then when someone comes and asks him, like, I want to be an astronaut.
Mm-hmm.
One person said. And he asked, first thing, he asked, what is your mathematics score? And he's like, that kid said, oh, it's above 95. Like, okay, good. Because if you said it was below 95, I would have said you can't pursue that. You have to work much harder. So 95 is fine. Okay, so how is your physics? Second thing which he asked. And then like physics is like Carl's thing. Okay, so maybe if you improve on your physics and your mathematics and if you gain some other advice he gave them,
mm-hmm.
you can maybe apply for a job as an astronaut.
Yeah.
So, but that's not how we figure out our... what you call our career path, right? It's not like, oh, so you want to do, again, if again, at some point you thought that, hey, I want to be a podcaster. What all do I need? Because you need maybe sound engineering or some basic course in that. You need how to maybe do an interview.
Actually, I think only one skill is very important these days is Googling.
You will learn. No, so that's why that one skill, like, and everyone kind of gets. And but again, it's even in an education system, they don't teach you how to Google effectively. They're like, don't use your mobile phone, which is why people don't even know how to Google. They have to kind of figure that out as well. So essentially, what you're, if you're good in mathematics, it's fine. There are some careers for you. If you are okay, like, again, career would be like MBA, finance, marketing, all that. So if you are pretty decent in mathematics, you can do like maybe like an engineering job, like where you have algorithms and stuff like that. If you are below average in mathematics, there's still more options for you as far as job. If you're poor in mathematics, that's fine. There are a lot of people who are into like social sciences, all those careers or teaching, which is why like I keep saying like the reason why I teach English is because it's the furthest subject away from mathematics. It has zero mathematics in it. It's as far as I'm concerned, it's a social science subject which I'm teaching. So forget memorizing, that's useless, our education, right? So if you're bad in mathematics, you just need to find your right job. Of course, other people will judge you because they have literally nothing to do with their lives. That is part of the package. As in, no matter what, imagine you sit in your room affecting no one in the universe, still people are judging you.
Exactly.
So that is part of it. Anyways, it's kind of like, oh, we are born, now we have to die. It's like, oh, now we are born, people will judge us. And it's not like an Indian thing. Of course, in India, it's kind of different, but whatever. So that's what I would say. Like, if you want to do mathematics, if you're good in mathematics, fine, find a career path like that. If you are poor in mathematics, that's fine. You just have to find a career path which works for you. Just people will judge. It's get used to it is all I can say.
But the only career options that all the kids, at least I was told, was engineering or medical. If you don't get into it, if you get into arts or commerce, you would somewhere, people would look down upon you, or you're not such a good student, or all those perceptions begin.
Like medicine, you would say like at least it's a good career, because right now the pandemic is happening. It's essentially you need all these doctors to do their job. But engineering, and I can assure you, as someone who was a software engineer in 2008, the year of the global recession, no, that job is not safe at all. Like, of all the people who joined the company where I first joined, 50% of them got kicked out during training. 50, that's half the amount of people got kicked out because they, and that was just, of course, an intentional training process in order to filter out a lot of people, because they selected all these people.
Yeah.
No, they had selected these people before the recession. The recession happened. They're like, okay, how do we get rid of them? We can't just ignore them. They might put a case against us. Okay, we'll call them. Give them a very difficult exam. Okay, you don't qualify. Get lost. So even that is not a very stable field. But it's a very high earning field. Like, let's say teaching, which I'm into, you have to work a while to get a pretty decent salary. On the other hand, if you're in software, you can start off with like somewhere around 15,000-20,000, which is why a lot of people are pulled towards that. And of course that. The huge problem, side effect of that, which I'm saying, is that most of my students are now married with children because they got their jobs quite early. Like I am like a decade older than them, and I'm looking at why do you need this added responsibility on you? So, but yeah, it's about marriage, but still this, you just kind of, you know, like rush the process. You don't need to.
So in the same TEDx talk, you also told that the education system which was made was made to be utilitarian and to prepare the masses to be the clerks or factory workers.
Right. So
what ways do you suggest students can prepare to be successful in life beyond this education system? I think the new education system isn't helping much.
The new education system has a lot of like,
positive.
It's a lot of corporate nonsense in it, which is kind of like, hey, instead of you doing 10 years plus 2 years, now it's going to be 4 plus 3 plus 3 plus whatever.
3 plus 3
and
plus
people 3. Are like, that's different, I mean, only on the surface level.
Yeah.
So again, if you've read that NEP, are you aware that there is, and I don't know how serious or they are about this or how they're going to implement this.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that valuation at some level is going to be not just the teacher, but a combination of a teacher, your classmates, and some AI component to it.
So
here's the thing. If you remember your school days, especially your younger school days, small children are idiots and they are violent psychopaths. So they don't know right from wrong. So imagine having your school bully rating you. Like earlier, at least they were under like the power of the teacher or whatever, like there was that authoritarianism was there. But now it's this element is not exactly going to help either. But again, you'll have to see when I personally don't think so, especially the fact that they removed English from a lot of lower classes where you need English to go up the ladder because, again, it's the global language. British Empire took over a lot of countries. Now we have to speak English.
I work in services sector and English is the main language.
Right. Yeah. Like, for instance, like, right, what is your native language?
Canada.
You're Canada. Again, mine is Malayalam.
Yeah.
So the common language between us is English. It's not Hindi.
Yeah, we cannot be conversing in Hindi. Yeah.
Hindi. Like both, my Hindi is atrocious. Like it's like I make fun of my own Hindi when I perform comedy. And people are like, oh, okay, he knows. No, my Hindi is horrible. Like I don't get words and all. I have to do like actions with my hands to convey what I'm trying to say. So the common language between us is English.
English, yeah.
So that's one point. Another thing why English is important is, what is the Kannada word for keyboard?
Oh, no clue. Actually, yeah. I have lost many words like that.
Yeah. Same in Malayalam. Like I'm sure there's a Malayalam word for computer, which I don't know. Like the more I teach English, the more my mother tongue is getting pushed to the side. But of course, when you do speak Kannada, or in my case Malayalam, people will identify you as a Kannadiga or me as a Malayali.
Yeah.
At that point, it's not like you talk with that weird English accent or whatever. It's perfectly fine to be from one state, but then speak English. Like we somehow have this weird colonial hang up that if you speak English, you are like some British overlord who's come to take over.
Yeah.
Which is not the case. It's just another language. It's not your IQ measurement stick. I mean, again, the British were here in 1947. Still, we are kind of like, still like, okay, why are we? We're angry at them for some reason. So, again, insecurities, obviously, as a country. So, in that sense, that is why. So, NEP, I don't think it does. It focuses away from English, which is a bad thing. Like, you and I, because of our middle class upbringing, like, I'm assuming you're middle class.
Totally.
So we kind of pick up English, right? Because of our parents or newspaper. But someone who is like from like a very poor, low income family, they might not have English in their home. So their only source of English was like school, where they could at least manage to say something in English. In which case, now that's they're deprived of that. So what English do they speak? They have to wait until like they're in upper classes before they can. And this is when you're very young, you can really pick up language. Like you can just, if you want to know the difference, try learning German or Japanese at your age right now. It's going to be, it's not impossible, but it's very difficult.
Very difficult.
Because our brain is already formed in certain ways. So, and we kind of have, young people you can teach to them at a younger age. So that's where like the NEP is not, it's not the, it has a lot of flaws. It is, I don't know what it's going
and
to
also I feel it is not going to be easy for them to implement, or it will easily take a lot of years to implement all this.
The implementation part of that I can tell. So one of the aspects of that, since I know, because yeah, I mean, education is that one thing which they implemented is something which you feel when I tell you theoretically, you would be like, hey, that's a good idea, which is apart from your teachers and your class teacher, you will have someone called a mentor, who's a teacher who's allocated to you. And like, if it's a class of 60, like around 10, 20 students, only those many students they have, they mentor them as in like they speak to them. They ask them, hey, do you have any issues? Or what are your life goals and all those things? And they kind of take look at you like a human being, basically. And they kind of guide you. So you could be like a maybe a highly motivated, brilliant student, or you could be a brilliant student who's not motivated. In which case you can kind of say that, okay, this person needs motivation. This person is fine. They'll take care of themselves. Things like that. Now, doesn't mentoring sound like a good idea? Like, don't you wish you had a mentor when you were in school?
Exactly.
Someone like an adult to tell you like, yeah, this is how the world is. or converse with them to an extent that, hey, when you go get your first payment, don't waste it on alcohol, you idiot. So things like that, just basic common sense, which you would know as a grown up, but not as a kid. This is a theory. The implementation of that is most people don't know how to mentor. Like, yeah. And they're given a lot of rules, as in like, yeah, don't do this, don't do that. Try to do this, try to do that. Call, talk to them, like so many rules, like, because you know how Indian education system is, like everything is like micromanaged.
Yeah.
So even the teachers, so there's no humanity to that element. Like a teacher can do that, but most teachers would be like, no, I have to finish paperwork. Or I spoke to the student, let me finish this paperwork and write what all he said, blah, blah, blah. And as an assessment, whatever they give us. So in the end, then they're just doing it because they're told to do it. They're not doing it because, hey, I want to help these kids or whatever. Which, and the problem with that is now the kids feel like, oh, we are getting extra help, but they're not. Again, once again, it depends on individual teachers. A teacher can take up the initiative and be a good mentor. But again, you know, Indians.
Class. That's it. It can become as another class.
It can, yeah, exactly. But then it, you know, Indians, you know how they are. They are mostly like, just say whatever. That half-assed way in which we do things. That's it. That's essentially what's going to happen. So that's just to give you an idea. This is already started. This mentoring workshops and all.
Oh, this already started.
I've attended. Yeah, the mentoring workshop has. I've attended one, and it was by someone like from North India, because. Just from the names I could figure out. But like the way they say things and the stories which they say, it's like the doubts which people are, you kind of aware that, okay, no one has any idea what they're doing. Like maybe the people who are taking class have an idea, okay, what if a student comes up to me and asks me this, what do I say? And they'll be like, oh, don't worry, just tell them this. And like, okay, so the people conducting the workshop know how to do. But the questions the participants are asking go along the lines of, once I asked my students to not use emojis or, you know, those emoticons while texting for one day. And they all got very angry at me. What should I do? Like, then why did you ask them to do that? It's kind of like, I don't know if they were trying to show off or whatever, but it's kind of like right now it's a lot of conservative minded older people like, hey, we want to be cool. We want to tell the kids like, we're also cool. And I'm like, you want to see what your kids are like, go follow them on Instagram. I mean, they might not accept your request, but still, you'll get an idea of the lifestyle which they lead. Like the entire one simple example which I can give you as in like why people, young people might not connect to that is for like in my, one of my class students, as the class where I'm a class teacher of, he got involved in some trouble, like some minor fight or something. It's nothing major. Mm-hmm. So the administration called him over and they were just kind of questioning him like how a police would question students. So it's not kind of like, okay, what were you doing? It's kind of like, what are you doing? Why are you this? What is this? What is this? Like that sort of tone. So already he's kind of like not comfortable with that. And while he's standing there, this one teacher is like, so do you smoke? And that's a straightforward question. Do you smoke? And of course, I knew they were asking that so that they can judge him on that or to say that, oh, he smokes, he's a bad person. And this kid, because he's from like he's young, he actually did not maintain eye contact, like, yeah, I guess, you know, once in a while. So he just wants, he's just very embarrassed to say that. So he, instead of saying yes, like, yeah, I guess, I don't know, whatever. And the teacher, you guess, you don't even know you smoke or not, you're guessing now in front of me, you're standing and guessing. And I at that point, like, so he literally, like, they couldn't understand the vernacular at all. And then at that point, I was just sitting there like this. And the other teachers were looking at me like, oh, look at sir, he's so distressed by the fact that his student smokes. I'm just trying to somehow control my laughter. He's like, okay, don't laugh at this nonsense. Show which is happening. Essentially, what is happening is this is, but that is a perfect metaphor. Old people shouting at young people who are mumbling something and there is no communication in between. That is the education system right now. Which is, I mean, even if it's all, that's how it, which is why no connection is happening. That communication gap exists.
I can easily say that all of my teachers were like this.
This shouty, this authoritarian sense of, see, that's another thing. Like if you, like Indian education system, the unfortunate consequence is very authoritarian. As in like, do this or I'll punish you sort of thing. Or you do this, I will give you a reward.
Now, the punishments has come down now, I guess. But during my time, yeah, it was harsh.
No, the punishment, yeah. Now, maybe again, physical, corporal punishment, which is illegal, rightfully so. So that has come down, but still there is that, what do you call, you don't have. So again, I think one of your questions which you had sent me, it's all about like positivity, right?
Yeah.
So the concept of positivity completely eludes Indians. So I did a course recently where it's like how to do a student profile, and it's like based out of some college in UK.
Mm-hmm.
And while doing that, they had this sheet where it said strengths and another column saying places or areas of improvement. It didn't use the word weakness.
Weakness, correct.
Because weakness is a negative word. So instead of that, they're like strengths and areas of improvement. They're going to improve that. Which just that simple wording alone will give it a positive spin. But again, in India, we would just go for strengths, weakness because it's convenient.
Mm.
Like this negative projection towards that. Another like simple example, which I, again, since I met with these publishers, I saw that if you follow these books for like really young children, like kindergarten, they have these images of like, oh, this is a cat, this is a dog. So that level communication. And it said like things you should not do. And it was an image. The thing was you should not play with plug sockets or something like an electrical socket. And like good message. The image was a kid using a fork and he is going towards the plug socket. And on top, they put cross.
That, now this will bring out the curiosity of the kids.
they're not going to see the cross. They're like, oh, this kid is, we should also do that. That's, so they're not realizing like the psychological impact of a lot of things. So now, of course, it's improving. A lot of publishers, they have contact again because of the internet, essentially. They have spoken and they know how to use a more positive twist. So, but point being that right now we should kind of, the pandemic essentially, it did not break the education system. Education system was broken. It just shone a light on, oh, okay, everything is broken. So we should essentially kind of revamp our system so it does not go around like exams. Like exams are like what we are kind of obsessed over that. I am sure IIT, you would know exams, like all the exams you took to get into IIT. So that you can take more exams. Exactly. What a fun life. Your life is exams. As in this usual principle, you get to 10th and everyone's like, if you fail this year, your life is gone.
Yeah.
And then you pass 10th and they're like 12th. If you fail this year, your life is gone. And then they keep doing that until you die and then your life is actually gone. So that this exams, that sheer tension which people provide, that is again, competitive exams, I understand the importance to that. So something like, maybe IITs, because it's a very limited, and that's a place where someone who's from an economically backwards background and someone who's from like a rich family can equally get in. Of course, they have different resources, so, you know, classism is still there. But still, at least you can say it's equal access. So there, maybe, yeah, you need competitive exam. But imagine like this, what is that area in Rajasthan? Kota, where that main training center, there is, you need to write an exam to get in there. But in order to pass that exam, there is a side entrance coaching where you go to train to write an exam to get into the training center where you can train to write the IIT exam. I like this huge snake is basically eating its own tail. That's like the Indian education system now. It's all exams oriented. We should at least by now realize that the NEP, when it came, it could have done this where it's no longer exam oriented. It's more like it's very hard to implement this, what is like called a buffet system where you get to pick your subjects, like at least at a broader level, and then you attend those courses. That happens in like some colleges, like I think JNU, but definitely FLU, English and Foreign Language University in Hyderabad. They have that course where it's like you get to select which all courses you want to take.
Okay.
So, and it's not like a set syllabus for you. It's like, okay, you pick this. And even place, and I think this is Finland's education, one of the Nordic countries where they're very chill. Literally and physically. So those guys, they have the system. Like, for example, if you are interested in World War II, that's your point of interest. They give you not just the history of World War II, but the economics of World War II, the politics of World War II, the science behind World War II, as in all the machines, everything they use, the media, journalism, that angle of World War II. Everything they give. On the other hand, if you want to do something like you want to open a cafe, so they'll teach you in economics things like accounting, logistics, all those list making, all that.
This makes a lot of sense.
So it's catered towards like a career. But then this is what happens when you have like so many career options. Here, unfortunately, because there are too many people, you can't implement that verbatim here. Because Finland, they were already socially distanced by the time the pandemic came, because this population density is so low. Here, on the other hand, since you're from Karnataka, Bangalore, we have the saying that if you throw a stone, you'll either hit a software engineer or a Malayali, usually both. So, the population density there is so high that because all these people are there. So, you can't really implement this thing at that level. But you can kind of try towards that to cater it more towards like, hey, so what do you like, more of like a person-based education. Now it's basically like marks-based, right? Which is why, of course, people are being judged. Like I don't know how to judge you as a person. So again, if you say like you're IIT, I'm like, oh, okay, he got into IIT. So that means he is he's good at passing that IIT JEE exams and the exams there. Okay, so he's a very studious person. Because that's what we heard. But that's not who you are as a person. That never conveys like your interest in doing podcasts or whatever. Yeah. So that came like, that might have arose recently, but whatever your interest is towards that is not being assessed there, right? So that level of assessment is how you should do. For that, you have to kind of see this multifaceted. Like if at all a teacher is listening to this, just not just like assess students on their academic marks, but also like, whether their parents are calling on their behalf to talk to the teacher, which means they are shy, they have issues talking, and they are either going to become complete introverts or they're going to overcompensate for that by being loud morons. So this is a small assessment. If the students are calling, because right now, just today I spoke to my new batch of students, like just before this, one of them is still calling me, asking some doubt about something. Like right now, whose call I have to attend after this. But that person, I'm going to note down that, okay, this person has huge, some level of anxiety. Because they've already called me 5 times, they called me 2 times now again. So, this level of, okay, and I'm assessing them as a person. On the other hand, if I look at their marks,
it's just the new batch, maybe the introduction class or something like that.
Classes will start only next week. So, right now, that I've not even seen them. So, and we're doing online classes, so I won't even see most of them. So, this is like an idea. Through this, I can assess like, but that's like my personal inclination. Like, if you're into comedy, you should be able to read people, because you're standing there on stage and you're doing comedy. You should be able to tell how the crowd is, like whether they're feeling it. Because occasionally, I was performing for, like I came prepared to do all these raunchy jokes about sex and stuff. But then I went there and in the crowd, there was like one guy, his wife and his elderly mother. I'm like, okay, definitely I can't do the sex joke. But instead of that, I like asked where they were from and they're like from Kerala. So I just did like my stereotypical Malayali jokes. And like, which is, if I do that in front of like young people, they would like, what is this? Because like your stereotype. But then for that crowd, you need to, because so that as long as the elderly lady laughs, I'm like, fine, good. This crowd is my crowd. But then, so that level of adapting for that, you need as a teacher. You can't just be like, go to every classroom, speak your sermon, then go. And which is why, like, again, religious people are becoming famous, because they have one bit of charisma. They will easily win over people. I'm not naming all these who self-proclaimed gurus, because you will get into trouble as well. So just say like all these religious people in general.
The skill of talking, the skill of judging the TG is...
Which is something they don't teach you in school or college. You just kind of have to figure it out.
Yeah. All which I feel, which is very important now, is actually never taught. I've never learned anything on any of these in school. Whatever I feel.
So how did you, so right now again, I'm sure like, because when you got this idea for a podcast, you realized like, hey, I want to talk to people, and like you got across to me on LinkedIn.
Correct.
But what experience do you think you went through as like in school or college that made you capable to do this? What do you think?
Not capable, but what motivated me was that I studied in all boys residential schools.
Okay.
So when I came to engineering, I was pretty awkward around women. I was not very fluent around them. I was shy to speak to them.
Right.
And I was not very open, and I never used to hang out with them. I felt that I wasn't, that actually hindered my confidence, not only in while speaking to women, but it in the overall, because it is a part of life, right? There was always a hang up. Why can't I do this? Why can't? Then I realized that this is not just my problem. People who have studied in co-ed also have the same problem. They cannot approach a woman. They cannot hold a conversation with a woman. That is because how we are conditioned that don't speak to strangers, or or even the girls are told, okay, don't mingle with boys too much, all this. So this is one of the questions that I wanted to speak about, the gap that you also mentioned in the TEDx talk, the all boys sitting at one side, all girls sitting at one side, and the gap, which is also a mental gap that has come in. So the same thing, I felt that we really need to do something. Actually, I need to reach out to the boys, anyone, people who are listening to this. At least let's help them to get over this anxiety, or it is normal. It is normal to, because if you're not around women, or if you're not encouraged to speak to them from the beginning of your life, you'll suddenly not become a very confident person in the college. And that actually is what I actually try to bring out on this podcast. That is why I named it the Man Makeover. So that was the motivation behind it. What made me capable? I'm not very sure of that.
So the reason why I asked you that is, and so what you just did right now, this, you kind of introspected, right? So this is what I've experienced.
Right.
And then you, so that level of awareness is a huge thing which is missing in like the education system. So someone like, again, comedians are self-aware to a fault, like, which is why most of comedians become like alcoholics or whatever, because they're a bit too aware. They're kind of like, so you know that awkwardness you have when you have like a conversation with someone and you say, I should not have said that. Like, you get that feeling, right? Or you're like, oh, wait, I should have said this. That was funnier. Like that post. Now imagine that, but like when you're instant that you're talking to a crowd. So that level of consciousness every comedian has, and they, most comedians might project like, hey, I'm cool, I'm really funny, like I get all the shows. But inwardly, we are all just like as insecure, if not more insecure than an average person. Because we just know how to hide it very well through jokes. So what you just experienced is not talking to girls. Like, so it's only when you mentioned that, like I saw your email and you'd mentioned this experience about not talking. And weirdly enough, like as of now, I can say like, I can talk to most people. Like, mostly, like, I don't care to talk to people because people are annoying. It's because I'm old, I guess. But I remember that even when I was in school, like, I had my group of friends, which, again, most people do. And which the same people who I went to, like, all the tuitions with, people I'll play cricket with, you know, typical, stereotypical Indian life.
Yeah.
But then none of those friends either, none of them were interacting with girls on a regular basis. So the only reason why I kind of stood out by the time I was in college and I was able to like basically talk to girls to some degree was that my English was good, because my mother is an English professor.
Oh.
Like, she's retired now. So English was always there in the house. And it is necessary that even though we have like Malayalam newspapers, we had like one English newspaper, the Hindu.
Hmm.
And they would tell me to read the editorial of Hindu, which is like the highest level of languages you can get. But that's good because of that exposure. And even the school I went to had this rule that, hey, don't speak Malayalam. If you speak Malayalam, you'll get fined. I don't think they actually fined us, but that fear kept us. Mm-hmm. So that this thing, that English helped me communicate, because it seemed like I can communicate. I'm like bilingual. All these people are like Malayalis who can kind of speak English. I'm like, I can speak both. So it seemed like, oh, okay. So I have this capability. Like I have this aware, like I can speak another language. And even when teachers catch hold of me in class doing some nonsense, they would be like, you know, basically battering me with questions. Sathwar, why are you doing this? But then I was able to speak clearly, like why I was doing that and how to basically diffuse the situation. And everyone's like, oh, okay. Oh, see, you can talk. And like, yes, that is all I can do. I can't do sports. I can't sing. I can't dance. Nothing I can do. No talent, but I can talk. So, which is why, again, now I'm in teaching and comedy, the two areas which require talking. So, No, that's like the, I basically adapted my life towards the thing which I can do. So this speaking ability, so just like you, again, I also underwent this sort of introspection. So without this awareness, you're not going to like improve. You'll just assume that either there's something wrong with me or there's something wrong with them. Who the them is changes. It could be like, oh, there's something wrong with women, or there's something wrong with people of another community, because, you know, racism is quite rampant these days for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
So all these, that introspection, if it's missing, this is where you come to. You come to this very incorrect conclusion that there's, it's not, and it's not that there's something wrong with you. It's just like, okay, this is your area of improvement. It's not a weakness. It's an area of improvement.
Area of improvement.
So even one thing which I want to tell you, because when you said this, you're doing a podcast to help men. It's all good. Just you are walking a very fine line, because I'm sure you know what is toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
Okay. So just again to describe, I guess, to anyone who's listening, toxic masculinity is like, it's okay to be masculine. Toxic masculinity is like the negative traits of it, such as, you know, hey, aggression is good because boys will be boys. No, it's not. Don't be like, you know, naturally aggressive. Or even these dumb marriage jokes which come across, like, oh, my wife is always shouting at me. And like, then why did you get married if you can't handle a person shouting at you, or you can't communicate, or maybe you're the... So all these kind of stereotypical jokes from the 1970s, which people are still saying now, like people will have this image of like, oh, that's what masculinity is. Like, the reason why I'm not getting women is because women nowadays are becoming feminists, or women nowadays are too smart. It's not that I need to fix myself, that common theorem is, which is why you're kind of teetering on the edge of that when you tell people how to be confident. And but yeah, no, like I said, don't worry, I'll be listening to your podcast. If you say something wrong, I'll report you. Don't worry. Anonymously, I'll
be
then report.
Yeah. And now coming to art, you also said that the importance of art in the
yes.
culture, in the society, and how art is in the education system is looked down the last option that a student can take after he cannot get science or anything else. So
right.
What is the importance of art, and how do we encourage students or just the masses to get into art? Because finally, everything is an art. Now, student, except you don't become an engineer or a doctor, everything else is an art. Like stand-up comedian is right. an art, podcasting is an art.
It has. So here's the thing. One, people, if they miss out, is that most of these, what they call art, it's not just purely art in most cases. I mean, of course, you have those very abstract movies or those paintings, which are like, that's pure art. You don't know, you kind of have to go by emotion.
Mm-hmm.
But then, so you take stand-up comedy. It's not just an art, it's also a craft. So the art part of it is what you have to figure out. The craft is what someone with experience can tell you. Like, so just the basic, most basic rule in comedy is called the rule of threes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've heard that rule of three is basically like you establish, reinforce, break. So like you say something, the third thing which you say will be like something entirely different. So again, and everything comes in threes. Like, so in, just to give an example of rule of three, there's like a comedian here in Cochin, like a young guy. So he has this joke where it's like these Christians have these different sects, S-E-C-T-S, sects as in different communities. It's like Marthoma, Jacobite, Chocobar.
Mm.
So again, you establish, okay, Marthoma, that's a community. Jacobite, reinforce, break. Now, the third one is like completely random. So you are leading people down one direction, then suddenly you take a right turn. So that's essentially like one of the basic rules in comedy. This most people might not be even knowing. It happens a lot in like natural writing. In fact, in shows like Game of Thrones, which is what do you call it? Playing with people's expectations, they intentionally violate the rule of threes in that. So I don't know if you followed Game of Thrones, but
yeah. And okay, we can so all talk when Ned Stark were beheaded, the whole hero of the season one.
So that's the kind of show that is, right? But I like towards the end, it got a bit messy, but there's this, so I forgot the character's name. He's the youngest. I think his name is Rickon Stark. Like a kid who, like the enemy, they capture him. They told him to run across the field while he's shooting arrows at him.
Correct.
So in that, if you rewatch that scene, he shoots like two arrows. Nothing happens. third arrow, they focus a lot on that. Like the music builds up and it's like he's pulling it slowly. There's a huge tension build up. He shoots the arrow and he misses. So now in our mind, that third arrow was the significant. So we don't know this logically. So when that happens, we're like, okay, now he's safe. Suddenly they don't even show him shooting. He gets shot with an arrow. He's dead. So that was the unexpected turn. So they intentionally played with the human idea that you are familiar with media. You're familiar with the rule of three, even though you're not aware of it. You're kind of, your brain is aware of it. So they played around with it. So this aspect, this craft aspect is what needs to be taught to people. So that, again, if you're pursuing art, anything which is in the arts, which is like is it comedy, podcasting, anything, just listen to a lot of content. You will, through your own this thing idea, you'll figure out how to do things. So like, you know, I'm pretty sure like even for podcasts, you kind of listen to a lot of podcasts and you saw that how they went. And you notice like how American podcasts, they talk really fast. It's sort of, I don't know, it's like some sort of ADHD thing they have there, because I guess people shift away from podcasts there a bit. Basically absorb art. Another thing which you should do is you should think about it, because most people don't have that reflection which comes, which is why like I don't know whose quote this is, but it's a very brilliant quote, which I heard from one, I guess, online classes, is that memory is the residue of thought. Memory is the residue of thought. So you could have gone to, let's say, Thailand and had a wonderful vacation. You got drunk off your mind, then you came back and you moved on with your normal life. But unless you are constantly like thinking about your experience, like, okay, I feel calm, I feel blue, whatever, I feel this is fun, I feel this is tiring, it's too hot, too many mosquitoes, all of that. Without that reflection, you are not going to learn from that experience. So that aspect, like without, like forget the craft side of it, that I already said, you can get a formal education. The art side of it, when you absorb all these different, whatever you want to do, absorb all that, think about what you just absorbed, like put your bloody phone away. Don't go to Instagram, post about it or whatever. Don't do anything. Just sit and think. Like a lot of people love acting out now. They won't think, they'll just act out. Don't sit there, think about it. And the reason why art is especially important is because you can reach out to people who you can't reach out to with art. Like constantly, like I've experienced. So again, this I'm sure any comedian would brag about these aspects. So not me boasting, but this is something which was a very like humbling moment for me. Like when I started like few years into comedy, like for me, it's essentially like I can go on stage and become a clown and everyone will laugh. Yeah, it's cool. It's fun. Obviously, there's tension of what if people don't laugh at my jokes, but still it's all fine. So I'm just telling jokes. It's like a very lighthearted career. And someone sends me an email saying that, hey, I was there to your show last time. And here's the thing, right? I had a recent, some huge story about some breakup. I don't know exactly details. I don't remember. I had this. But then I do not know what to do. But then I just randomly came to your show because my friend said, blah, blah, blah. For the first time, I was able to laugh after, well, I'm guessing like a short period. But the way he's expressing is that for millions of years, I have forgotten to laugh, like over dramatic. But then that the fact that he decided to sit down, confess his entire breakup to me and say that, hey, you're the reason I laughed that day. Thank you for that. He just kind of like, hey, I'm not that big a deal. Calm down. I'm just telling jokes about dicks and all. So what is this? Like you feel like, oh, you're doing a, but then because of the value of your art, you might be reaching across to a lot of people. Like you could come across a YouTube impact channel and be like,
you can really impact a lot of people.
You can impact a lot of, see, even your podcast again. So again, call me back on when you're famous. I'm assuming you're not ignoring me back then. So by that time, I'm sure a lot of people will reach out and say things like, hey, this is exactly what I wanted to hear. I did not know you could do this. Things like that. You're just exposing them to that and they would be now be thankful to you. Maybe you might inspire them to create their own art. Because this main thing which I say in my TEDx talk, which is that the oldest example of human intelligence is art. It is, I mean, people will say that it's Spears and all that, but then the art is what like, oh, wow, this is so beautiful. People will look at Spears and like, ah, oh, they were intelligent. I mean, primates create that as well. It's not that it's not important, but this art reaches across like from basically what you can call the heart of a person. I mean, it's not the heart. That's like a dramatic term we all use. But then like, not just like your logical side of it, your emotional side. Yeah. It reaches across to that. And there's a movie, so I forgot the name of the movie. It stars Tom Hardy, which it's about the most dangerous prisoner in the world. So, so let me just hold on. I think I'm just slowing it down now. Most dangerous prisoner in the world. The thing is, the story entirely is about some guy from England who, and again, I would recommend you watch this movie once I find out the title. It's entirely, the movie is about this guy who, from a very young age, he's been a very violent person, and he keeps getting thrown to prison. And while he's in prison, he's still violent there. So they keep putting him in solitary confinement. And he says, like, in his lifetime, he spent like around 30 odd years in solitary confinement. So it's 30 years without any human interaction, possibly making it worse for him. And no prison wanted to host him. Like, no prison wanted to have him, because he'll just be creating violent nightmares. So even they send him to a psychiatric ward, he burned down the place. But here's the thing, he's not murdered a single person in his life. He's not murdered anyone. But towards the end, they show this one instance where he has like an arts teacher. And at that point, he kind of slowly starts expressing himself a bit through art. He's still a bit violent, as in that he kidnaps his art teacher and starts painting on his face and all. So he is, that violent tendency is there, but he's expressing his weird nature through that art. And after that, he gets captured once again, he gets thrown in prison and his life goes. So this one story about this most violent prisoner gave me the idea, like, you can even reach like the most
violent
person just through art. Obviously, you can't, like, maybe not through words. At that point, you can reach it through art. So that's like the, what do you say, the reach and impact of art, which again, entirely missing, because people here, like, what career can you make out of it? Because we are too practical, unfortunately. So in this current economy, in this current society, I would just say, like, hey, you can figure out your, if you really want to do it, you can do your regular life, as in school, college, job, whatever. You can do this on the side.
Exactly.
Like, your job is what keeps your body alive, because you need food. And your art is what's going to keep your soul, quote unquote, soul alive, like who you are as a person. So if you, but if you don't do that, if you live a life where you're like, you're working or you're studying, then you come back home, you eat, you sleep, repeat, you're just a dead person. Figure out what you like doing. And the last thing, as in like how people can get it, try exposing yourself to art, which you don't usually view. Like, for example, if you're into, okay, so just here, I'll just tell you how you can write. What kind of movies do you usually watch?
I watch a little dark kind of movies, or like all this Gangs of Wasseypur.
Okay, so gangster. Okay, so it's like, that's like a modern era in Bollywood where they started doing this gangster flicks. So you don't watch foreign movies?
Not much.
Okay,
not into Bollywood. Not into foreign movies.
Okay, so that's like one thing which you're not usually exposed to. Watch foreign movies, and I don't mean just like your Marvel's, Avengers or whatever. Watch other kind of movies, because if you want gangster flicks, Japan has some of the most violent, brutal gangster movies ever, because they have an active gangsters there, right? They have the Yakuza, who's like actively part of society. So they have a lot of Yakuza flicks and all that. So again, hyper-violence, not just gunshots, bloods, like internal organs and stuff. So when you expose yourself to that, you kind of like, one, you are now, you're saying like, hey, this is maybe your standard of violence. Suddenly you see a movie where the standard of violence is here. And you're like, okay, why did I like this? But why am I not liking this? Second question, why is this violent different from this violence? Like, what we call violence in India is, why is that different from that? Like, for example, in India in the 90s and 2000s, you had a lot of movies where you had the comical character, like the comedy sidekick will come, he'll be annoying and they'll just slap him. So that's violence. But we accept that. Yeah, that's normal. Like, but just imagine in real life, your friend comes up to you, says a joke you don't like, and you slap him. That is just such a weird, violent thing to do, right? So now through that, you can explore different areas. So even like, again, not just podcast, watch different movies. So this is my personal prescription to you, because I'm very much into movies.
Okay.
Like I explore a lot, like again, I explore a lot of, like, understand a lot of the local culture order through their movies. So which is why we are used to the American popcorn flick, because colorful, violent movement is happening, because we don't have much time to spend invest in movies. you have the European cinema, which is more about like, okay, let's sit down, let's think and all. People, I don't want to think, I want to run around. So, which is why people are not so much into that. So, like that, which is I would prescribe to you. My personal prescription is check out Japanese Yakuza flicks. If you, and the movie which I had mentioned is starring Tom Hardy. It's called Bronson. B-R-O-N-S-O-N.
Bronson.
B-R-O-N-S-O-N. So anyone who's listening, go check out Bronson. It is a very weird movie. It's not very weird, actually. It's an average weird movie. Very different from your regular movie. Try to go till the end of that. Because it doesn't have any twist or ending. Like it. It's just how this person is. And if you find yourself relating to this person, you really need help. Because he's not he's the protagonist. He's not supposed to be a hero. He's supposed to be a violent criminal. So keep that in mind. So that's the art.
Now coming to the important part of the question, coming to sex.
Yes, of course.
As you say, it is the biggest paradox in India that it is the biggest obsession and also the most taboo topic in India.
Right.
So I think we can solve the taboo part if the if we take care of the if we solve the taboo part, the obsession can take care of itself.
Okay. No, that's actually, I would agree with that, because like since when I said it back then, it was, I guess 2017, I said it's both an obsession and a taboo. But I feel like it's an obsession because it's a taboo. Mm. As in, it's directly related to that. Because it's a taboo, it becomes an obsession for a lot of people. Which is, again, of course, a lot of cultural things associated to that. But just the fact that if, again, any male actor puts out a photo on Instagram and he's just like, he's got his shirt open and all, people might openly express like, oh, this looks sexy or this is nice. But if a woman shows some level of cleavage, there will be at least be one Indian who goes and comes, she very bad, no, dirty. Like, because, and that has nothing to do with the photo, that is you.
There'll be lot many more.
Yeah, I'm saying minimum, like I'm being very optimistic here, but at least one person. So it's like, it's, that's because like basically beauty in the eye of the beholder, it's their mind, which is there. Because we kept it so taboo, which is why, I'm sure you remember the one class on reproduction which you had in school.
Yeah.
For me, the teacher did not even come to class. Like, she just sent another student to write the notes. She sent the notes. We all wrote that while giggling at each other. And the teacher was good enough to not use any term like penis or vagina. It's entirely male reproductive organ, testicles, like... It was so clinical that is when, because that is the day when people, like, you know, everyone was like, yes, today is the day we are going to listen to everything. Yeah. But then like, again, because people can't see, like, I don't know, the sexuality, I believe, okay, I'm not 100% sure, because India was an openly sexual
country, correct.
Before. Mm. So that I just, again, a clue what I say in my talk as well, when that Konark temple, the openly orgies, everything, sex with a horse, everything is happening there. So in that context, but that's only like 1/10 of the, what do you call, the sculptures there.
Hmm.
There are a lot more. It's just that we are obsessed and that's why we pointed out to that. But the Konark temple is kind of an idea of how ancient India was. Like, I believe, of course, there was a lot of things like casteism, religion. But India was more open sexually. Then the British came with their puritanical values from the 16th and 17th century. And they're like, no, sex is bad. You cover up everything. And somehow we inherited that just because we got easily ruled over. We were essentially like in a toxic relationship. So we kind of took on their traits. And even after the British left, we still have those Victorian era kind of mentality.
Yeah.
Where the purity of the woman or like how a man should be gentleman. It's fine. So... there is this concept in politics called the Overton window. What that is that at any point, we can only discuss this much of a spectrum. So let's say like politics-wise, you have right wing here, left wing here.
Mm.
In the center, you have someone like Mahatma Gandhi. Mm. So left, you have Nehru. Right, you have Sardar Vallabhai Patel.
Mm.
So that was originally how India was. But then slowly, if people started favoring Nehru, Gandhi, then Overton window will shift and Gandhi will start becoming right wing. Nehru will become neutral, someone like maybe Che Guevara would be like a more leftist, or that's true. Okay. So the overturn now, this thing, Sardar Vallabhbhai Patel is not even in the country. He is too much of a radical. We don't even talk about that. So, but it can shift the other way as well, which is unfortunately what is happening right now across the world. So similarly, when you have these discussions about sex, we have these very pure, backwards, conservative ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Center is kind of like someone like us. We are talking about sex without not actually referring to anything. We are kind of openly talking about the discussion of the topic. The other extreme might be like all these people who are like openly talking about their sexuality and like all these shows you have about like, I don't know, the four more shots. So what are those shows where women are? It's a very sexual show and all that. And all these, I keep seeing these complaint about female comics is that they're talking way too much about their sexuality. I'm like, most male comics in the West used to do that in the 60s. Female comics are just able to do that now. So let them have their, let them do what is your, you don't like the joke, you get lost. That's fine. It's not meant for you. If a woman comic wants to talk about how she has sex, that's her thing. It's maybe that content is not for you. That's all. But what this helps is that it slightly shifts the Overton window in that side. They are now part of the discussion. So now at least we know, as in commonly amongst young people, we know that the our parents' generation is a bit too conservative.
Correct.
We won't spit on them, but we'll be like, ah, this is, they are a bit too conservative. More, you don't have to openly like talk about free the nipple or something, but you can still be a bit more open about it. So this window is slightly shifting thanks to young people. The only thing which I feel like anyone can do simply is that if at all anything sexual is spoken, once again, awareness, introspection. If you feel uncomfortable, instead of going and shouting at some Instagram comments like a crazy person, sit and think why you are feeling uncomfortable with that. Or maybe you are feeling uncomfortable because you feel that is sexually arousing to you. Why are you being sexually aroused by that? What life decisions did you take to be sexually aroused by Instagram photos? So that general idea, which is why, like, you know, how Indians, we say like after this thing, when someone gets married, they ask like, is there any good news? They won't ask like, are you pregnant? Because even using the word pregnant is a bit too progressive for people, I guess.
Yeah.
It's like, are there any good news? Are we going to see as new member of the family? And just like, are you going to have a kid? So essentially what they want to say, like, did you guys have sex?
Yes, sex.
Fine. Did it work? Is he fertile? Like all these things. So again, and of course the victims of all these would be like everyone. Like if you just partake in the system where you kind of think like sex is taboo, definitely you are already a victim. You are both an oppressor and a victim. Like just because you don't subscribe to that, now I don't care. No, I'm not worried about what photo Nicki Minaj puts. I mean, I don't like Nicki Minaj personally. That's a different thing. But then I don't care about the outfit she's wearing as well. Now, again, someone might ask me, what if you're someone in your family member wears some skimpy outfit or something? And to that point, I'm like, yeah, that's, if they want to sexualize themselves, that's their choice. It's like, it doesn't diminish me as a person, right? Of course, and like the huge misogyny is also a huge thing in India, which is why they always say like, what if your mother sister? That is what they'll always go to. Like, oh, so you want to have sex with woman? What if you people want to have mother sister sex with your mother sister? Every time it's that mother sister thing.
That's,
I think that's awesome. Not, you're not talking about sexuality, you're talking about misogyny there. You just don't think women are good enough on equal footing with men, which is why you have all these dumb, again, if you are the person who subscribes to this joke where it's like guys having sex with multiple women is a cool thing, but women having multiple sex is a bad thing. That idea comes because in ancient times when agriculture revolution started around 30,000 years to 10,000 years ago, men owned property. Or at the same time, a woman can always verify that this child is mine because it came out of me. A man cannot prove that because they didn't have DNA testing back then. So they said, okay, so both of you get married, you have sex to each other. That's all. No other this thing you can do. And then the child which comes from you is belongs to this man and this woman. Now we are just for this one, basically like it's a clerical error which we wanted to avoid. And we are like, oh, monogamy, sexuality, everything comes from that one thing. So that I think it's more than time we can get rid of that prudish culture, which is like why just women talking about sex openly on whatever social media, whatever platform they get, that is good enough, because that gives men an opportunity to reflect, as in like, am I okay with this? Am I not okay with this? What is happening there? And just respect them. You don't even have to respect them, like, and respect does not mean bow down, like the Indian term respect, where you basically bow, are like being their servant. I'm saying respect as in look from afar and say that this person is my equal. What are they doing? Like, don't put it down. Like, don't treat sex like. And of course, I think it's going to be hard, but then slowly start sharing these memes or whatever, which has some sexual reference with your parents. That is how you test the waters, and that way you can even have a conversation with your parents.
Yes,
not directly by saying like, hey, this is dick, this is vagina. I'm not saying like that, but making like some sort of sexual reference at least. So that if you can do that. Again, this is not at all recommended to people who are not very confident in their conversation skills, because you're going to ruin it anyways. So only for those people who think like, I feel like I can talk to my parents about it. I think they'll be cool about it. If you're of that opinion, yes, go ahead, do that. Else, stay away from that. Your parents are very awkward. You're going to make them uncomfortable. That's all. Just keep that in mind.
So, how do you, as in kids and adults need guidance, right? Instead of hiding this, an important subject like sex, how important is sex education? When, how, and where can we impart it? Or if not,
obviously it's at school level. If regular teachers are uncomfortable with that, you allocate one class at least and one teacher for that, who travels around multiple schools, gives them the sex talk. So then they learn through, again, just like how we do comedy, they'll realize how to deliver their material, which is essentially how to, because see, teaching is essentially stand-up comedy, but not serious, but not funny. So this sex teacher can go around multiple schools, expose themselves to different students and say, okay, this is how you deliver it. Then the other teachers don't have to feel awkward about that. And but the thing is, that person who's teaching that should also give this very clear idea that, one, it is normal. Two, do not weaponize sexuality. And why I said don't. So again, weaponizing sexuality is not normal. So for example, it is okay for people to at any point realize that at one point your parents had sex. I know it seems very unlikely, because the way most Indian parents operate is that they can act maximum, they can shake hands. That's all. They'll talk about business, they'll shake hands, then they'll go to different rooms.
Right.
But it is very, it should be made clear in your mind that no, you don't have to visualize your parents having sex. See, that's now weird. Don't go there. But just acknowledging this fact is like, okay, and then move on in life. So similarly, what one problem which I have heard one government school teacher said that she faced is that, so again, she teaches for like more English medium. One of her first few classes on a local medium, Malayalam medium, and she said that while she was talking about sex ed to her students, it felt like she was reminding them that sexuality is a thing, and they were very obviously staring at her in that sense. Like they were sexualizing her at that moment. So, because they don't have an outlet for that, right? So, and again, outlet, once again, one of the most normal things on this planet, but then is now the act of complete shame, is masturbation. The fact that, again, literally, again, anyone who's hearing it, we know you do it. Okay, it's fine. Your dad probably does it. It's still fine. It's fine. But the thing is that, again, people, when you just say this out loud, if I say this in my school, definitely I'm going to get minimum warning, maximum I'm going to get kicked out. Because they're like, what are you doing? Why are you ruining society? Like, so, but that's the tie. That's when you basically kill the messenger. You have to basically take that information now, figure it out. But once again, for that, education system itself has to be operating on that level. We are going to give you information. Like we, and the information given should also like be taught in a way like how it affects, that information affects someone psychologically. Like for instance, like right now, I can just insult you to your face. At that point, maybe I might get a reaction out of you where you might just smile and be like, oh, that's okay, that was weird. Or you might be silent for a while, you might get awkward. But then there's a psychological distinct to that. Much later, you went, but why did he call me that insult? Why? What was that? So that's the psychological aspect of that. We don't have that in education as of now. So we don't think like, hey, if I shout at this kid, what are they going to do? The teacher might just be frustrated, angry, they're overworked, they go home, they have two kids to take care of, it's they're just so overworked. They're just building up frustration, and this kid has some stupid doubt. They're like, are you an idiot? Don't you even know this? And suddenly that kid's confident now goes. They'll never ever ask a doubt again.
Correct.
But that is not the environment where you can easily teach sex education. In that environment, it's just going to be once again like this 8th standard class where I had them talking about testicles and fallopian tubes or whatever.
Female sex organ.
just random sex organs. But instead of that, it should be more of like, hey, I'm going to teach you like a human being. You're all human beings. My human being. Talk about this. But let's not make it awkward. Also, your parents had sex. Surprise. Then immediately everyone's mind goes blank. So, yeah, no, I'm just off course. Right now I'm riffing. But then, yeah, basically, someone who's responsible and someone who's more has some level of empathy so that they know how to connect to the crowd. So, again, it's not required when you're a comedian that you're an empathetic person, but it helps because you can realize what that person is going through. Like, just like, again, to compare comedy and sex education. In comedy, if you're doing a joke and one person doesn't laugh, again, you can have an entire crowd of 100 people laughing, but one person doesn't laugh, our focus is there. And now we are going to make that one idiot laugh. That is our mission for tonight. So, I mean, its obsession is not great, but then if you are kind of empathetic, you can kind of ease your way into that. Oh, maybe that person is not laughing because there's some reason to that. Let me access that. Or if someone comes late to a show, you can be like, hey, fuck you, you came late. Or you can be like, you can make a joke about it, like say that, hey, why are you late? And they'll say traffic. And then you can make a joke about traffic and say that how people make it. Again, that comes from empathy because you're genuinely believing that, oh, this person might have a genuine reason. Therefore, let me go easy on them.
Right.
Same with sex ed. If you do something along those lines, it's like, if I teach these to these kids, probably their parents have never spoken to them about this. Their only exposure might be like random movie posters and like that one Brian Panty ad, which is there in some place. And of course, boys are maybe very regressive society. Maybe caste comes into play here. Maybe religion comes into play here. All these economic background, class, everything, take that into consideration and then educate them. Like a human being. Currently, education system doesn't have this consideration. Students are not people. Students are essentially numbers. Like, 50% of my class passed. We're not saying that the other 50%, what their names are, who they are, nothing. That doesn't matter. So this level of, what I would say, corporate education doesn't work for them. So that is why that we might face a small problem. Hold on. Okay, there we go.
Yeah, that makes sense. The awareness and empathy does make sense.
Awareness and empathy, yeah. It's the takeaway for today.
Okay. And coming to once we have spoken about sex and we know how to, go about it or speak about it. As you just told that, test waters and then go ahead and speak about it with your parents. Or if your parents are too orthodox, then don't even go ahead.
Right.
Hear that. So what about heartaches? Like, these are the things that a student or a person really usually goes through during his college days. And this is also not spoken too much, that a person keeps to himself and he doesn't express that he has gone through an heartache because of students or the peers laughing at him or people judging him or parents not just open about listening or even speaking about this.
Right. So this is essentially what I was telling you about, the psychological trauma which you can receive, because again, mental health is, I don't know, like, okay, let's see how was it in like your IIT, because again, I'm assuming since that place has the best teachers, were they also the kind of people who would insult a kid outright there? And like, everyone. Yeah, you don't have to mention teachers.
Not everyone, but there were few.
Right.
Yeah.
There were few. So that's, again, the old way. So again, people don't realize the impact which they're making from that. So because one thing which people realize, like, our life is not like something which we have to achieve. As in, most people have this expectation, like, I'm going to be an engineer, or I'm going to get married and have two kids, or I'm going to travel to the US, whatever random goal they have. And they believe that once I achieve that, I am done. I have sorted. My life is awesome. But you know, life is not, it is not in the getting, it's in the doing. Like the process is what brings you joy.
Correct.
So again, for comedy, what I can tell you, like if I tell you about the process of me personally, this is after, like, I've been doing comedy since 2012. So it's been 8 years. Mm-hmm. I've not been doing as many shows as someone from like Bombay or Bangalore, because again, I'm in Cochin. Okay. Like you are looking at like majority of the comedy scene right now. So tiny place. So, but then even right now, before I do a show, I can't just like, someone calls my name, I just go on stage and tell jokes. Like the moment I wake up, I'm like, oh, okay, I'm going to do a show today. Shit. And then I have to get myself into that mindset. I have to write down my jokes. I have to read that order of jokes. I have to psych myself up before going. I have to, customary for most comedians, we have to go take a toilet break, because just to keep our body lighter, not have anything heavy. Like some people, I don't know, alcohol works for them, doesn't work for me. So I avoid anything of that sort. Keep my mind clean, because I believe like the smallest slip up is going to ruin for me, is how I believe. It's not, again, comedy is not this serious of a thing. It's just how I deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And after this arduous process of basically suffering from anxiety for an entire day, I go on stage. After that, my throat is sore. My body is aching because of overexertion. I'm sweating like hell. I probably will be tired as hell. But the fact that I did that is now an achievement. So
yeah. The
process itself seems like torture. But it's still, I don't know, at the end of the day, I'm fine with it. Like I've never done this and felt like, oh, it was a bad thing, I should stop doing comedy. It's just so much of a this thing. So this, again, so what you said with heartaches and all that, as in, like, it's basically like your expectations are not met. You thought that you can just ask that person out and they'll say yes. Or you thought that you're going to hang out with your friends after 2 years today. Or you thought that you are going to get into this college or this school, but you couldn't. So your expectations were there, they were not met, and now you're feeling sad. So that is like, even though it's very cliche to say, like, yeah, it's just normal, like life is just up and down. It's essentially, I feel like one thing which you can do just to overcome that is, we realize that at some point you will not be sad. Like when you are sad, you would think like, ah, this is, my life is gone. I am so sad forever. It's not. You will stop being sad at some point. And at some point you will be much more happy. It might not be on the same thing. Like you as a person, subjectively, I'm not saying like world-wise, yeah, you, oh, that was the love of your life. And now since you're no longer with her, your life is lover. It's not. It's like, yeah, you're going to be fine. Like, you know, a lot of Jews survived the Holocaust. It's not like we went through what they are, or what most people are suffering in the Middle East right now.
When students, the young adults go through heartache, they take it very seriously. Like there is no one else to go and tell them that it's okay, you'll find something else, something good will come out of it. These just seem words, right? During that.
Because they are essentially words, right? At that point, it's... So if you have a friend whom with, like, again, you go out to their house and you both just chill in the room. Like both of you are just sitting in the same room. You're not talking to each other. You're just kind of doing your own thing. If you have some friend like that, that's the level of friends you should be having. It's not that you have to constantly converse or interact with each other. I mean, it depends. It's not, I'm not saying relationships are like, you know, they're all custom made, because we are all human beings. We are custom made, right? So maybe... But like what worked for me, like once when I had a breakup, I mean, one of my many, at that point, a friend who was earlier happy to hear that I was going to get married, like earlier, and then my breakup happened. And the same friend, when I spoke to her again, she's like, ah, it's okay. Now you can do whatever you want in life. So objectively, this is a very hypocritical person. Like earlier, she's like, oh my God, you're going to get married. Now she's like, hey, now you're not going to get married. You can chill in life, man. Now, this does not make any logical sense. But that is what I wanted to hear at that point. I just want to hear another person kind of saying, you know what, it's okay not being married. These are the advantages of not. In that particular, again, it depends on, depended on my relationship with her at that point, that I was close enough to her so she could tell me this. So and that's what you needed. So you might not have that because, again, people are way too influenced by movies, especially this horrible bunch of movies from this place called Bollywood, where everyone is like, no, if she says no, become a complete criminal, stalk her to the point of rape, but don't rape, and then she will like you. Like, no, like whatever this Arjun Reddy's and all these nonsense movies which are coming. Arjun, wait, no, I don't know. Is there a Kannada equivalent in Arjun Reddy?
There is no Kannada equivalent. Hindi is there, the Kabir Singh. And there Kabir was a Tamil Singh, also.
Aditya. There was one in Tamil.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the Aditya Varma or something.
Hindi was Kabir Singh.
No, but even forgetting that, like in Kannada, there's one movie which, again, my students recommended I watch, which is, wait, I don't know if this is Kannada or I think it's Telugu, because, again, I just watched the dubbed version, which is KGF. Is that Kannada or Telugu?
KGF was Kannada.
Kannada. Yeah. So, yeah, I saw that movie and I'm like, my God, this movie is horrible. Like, I mean, it's entertainingly horrible. I it's fun to watch that and you can make jokes. Like, it's basically like, get drunk with your friends and watch that kind of thing. In that, it's essentially this dude, again, who has like the beard and hairstyle of someone who's from 2010. So, yeah, clearly it's happening in 1970s. And apart from that, like there's that one dialogue which I entail. Have you watched that movie?
Yeah, I watched that movie.
Okay, so my favorite line from that movie is that when he confronts like the heroine and it's just like, how dare you? And he's like, how fare you?
That's how you...
This kind of lines, it's just, it's like the dumbest nonsense. Try doing that in real life. Like, you go up to a woman who you're trying to hit on. If you've gotten to the point where she says, how dare you? And you respond with a, how fare you? Best thing you can get is that she walks away without doing anything. So this unfortunate consequence of that is people use that in real life. As in like, oh, there, this should work. It's far from working. All of this, apart from the weird stalking and all, this kind of pseudo confidence, which all these. So seeing this one dude, KGF from that movie, one of my students was growing that huge honeycomb beard, which they have, because he was inspired by this movie. And I'm like, is there no good movies for you to watch? Why are you inspired by this? So this is why like people, but look at these guys, right? Look at these heroes. They don't have heartaches. They're like perfect. They're confident. But they also help people. So they have a heart of gold. Also, they can beat up a literal army with like one hand. Yeah. They have no issue. Mm-hmm. So everyone aspires to be that guy. And again, this is toxic masculinity at its finest. Like South Indian toxic masculinity. The same thing if you play in Tamil Nadu and Kerala, everyone will like it. So it's that basically that toxic masculinity kind of restricts you from expressing your emotions and saying like, yeah, I'm hurt. You don't have to cry or whatever. Just like, I'm feeling sad. And most people are like, boys, don't do this. What is this? It's okay. It's fine. It's emotions are normal for a human. You don't have to suppress that, this performance which you are doing right now. So it's at that point, like how you said, most parents don't know how to deal with their child.
Yeah.
Because one thing is that, say again, that the relationship between most Indian parents and their kids, what they would have is that the parent would consider their child as like their hand, essentially. Like even the smallest injury which comes to the child, the parent is going to feel it. Like it's almost like it's literally their flesh, actually. But then it's like an extension of their body. They're like, I don't want any harm to come to you. But at the same time, if you understand, a hand has no autonomy. It is not a thing which operates on its own, which is why when a child wants to do something which is against their parents, which is, they're like, this thing is broken. What is happening? Why is this not behaving like the way I said? So that communication barrier is a huge thing there. So because of that, you can't even communicate on a day-to-day basis. How are you going to communicate something complex like emotions? So this is why sometimes it's okay. Like if you are feeling sad, just to listen to some romantic song and sit in your room and cry and no one watches you. Sometimes it's okay. You can just go for a walk. Sometimes you want to eat like, I don't know, some cake, whatever makes you feel good. Just like, you know, don't indulge in like things which are addictive, like alcohol or drugs. That is the worst way you can deal with a heartbreak, because once you believe that, hey, I'm sad, but if I drink alcohol, I won't feel as sad. Okay, my light went off. Good. So I won't feel as sad. So I'll drink alcohol. Every time I feel sad, I'll drink alcohol. Well, I'm not even feeling that sad. I'm feeling slightly sad. I'll drink alcohol. Then now you are an addict. Congrats. So not an addict, like you're dependent on that. So any not addictive substances, including coffee, cigarettes, nothing, don't use that to treat your thing. What I would say is just like, so again, what most people say for anger, like there is no way you can deal with anger. The only thing which you can do is you can distract yourself until the anger is gone. So this is what they usually teach in like anger management therapy, not therapy, like somewhere I read online, not like I had therapy. So like I've not had that level of exposure to experts. So it's basically if you're angry, just distract yourself with something nonsensical. It's completely irrelevant. And then slowly your anger will subside. Same way, like if you have anxiety, and this I've seen in like one of these Netflix shows where one person's having like a anxiety attack in a party. And then immediately another person comes up to them like, okay, quick, tell me, what is the color of the wall? They look and like, it's this color. What is the color of that ceiling? Oh, this color. What are you holding in your hand? Oh, I'm holding a glass. What are you doing? What shirt are you? I'm wearing this. What shirt am I wearing? Oh, this. Okay, so how do you feel now? Oh, I feel better. Because just because their mind was distracted for a while, their anxiety subsided. So I feel that's like the best way you can, like if you're feeling some emotion, just let it play out. You don't have to, like, we don't have this thing called like having a mental health day, right? Like, if you are feeling cold or a headache, you can take a leave, but you can't take a leave because you're like, you know, you feel sad because you don't know how to. And again, for this, mental health awareness needs to happen. But I feel heartbreak is not exactly there, but it's in that spectrum where we have mental health awareness. Like, you need to have some time for yourself, like to take care of yourself emotionally, as because of course we are all emotional beings. We pretend like we are logical beings. And we pretend like, hey, I'm doing this because it's a rational. No, we don't. We're just doing it because we felt like we are very much governed by our biology and whatnot.